It's our club. I have a vote. You have a vote. We all care. There's no future for us as fractured or cruel. The only way forward is to acknowledge that we are all doing our best and that everyone who loves Wimbledon is on the same team. Divided, we fall. Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Same Old Wombles. Same Old Wombles is brought to you by some of us responsible for bringing you Yellow and Blue back in the day. We're non-affiliated and non-partisan. It's a wonderful thing to be optimistic. It keeps you healthy and keeps you resilient. Right now, it feels like it's quite hard to do. My name is Mark Lewis, currently in post as the host of the Same Old Wombles for 8 weeks, which puts me in a far longer situation than either the current Prime Minister or Chancellor. Today's panel features Matthew Cooper, Niall Cooper, and Alex Folks. And our special guest, the man who grew up in Elsfield and had his first ever game sitting in the North Stand against Darlington on the 6th of December, 1980, apparently. Big Same Old Wombles welcome to Joe Blair. Tonight, we're going to discuss who's going to last longer in their job. Johnny Jackson or the current Prime Minister? Troubling times on and off the pitch. What did exactly get said to whom in the stand on Saturday? A lot of us were physically there or close by witnesses, so we can all contribute to that. And what consequences do Saturday's events have for the Don's Trust board elections, as there are now 7 vacancies? And to Fox everybody, even though Adam's not joining us tonight, we have some numbers. Welcome to Same Old Wombles, episode 9.
All I want to do is watch football. All I want to do is watch football. We fell down, we fell broke, like we ain't got a hope. Like the times when you're down to 10. What can you do when they're coming at you? You gotta take it back to them. We've done what we should, fought as hard as we could.
Evening, chaps. How are we all?
I'm having an interesting week, Mark.
Is that what you call it? Okay.
Yeah, it's been hell on earth.
There's only been a couple of times where I've just felt that this low about being a Wimbledon fan. Saturday was one, and back in King's Meadow once we tried to do a banner that said refugees are welcome, and it got torn down by some of the fans. And those are 2 points. I just were quite harrowing, but Saturday's was just horrendous vitriol. I mean, it was
not
just
big or clever. Okay, so let's jump straight into that. Obviously, Niall, unfortunately, it impacted and was aimed directly at you. So if you're comfortable with it, do you want to just talk us through what happened, your understanding of what happened, and obviously how it made you feel?
Yeah, I mean, it's it follows on from a torrent of abuse that I've taken on social media over the last few months for a whole range of things. And I'm fully aware that level of abuse that other people who volunteer and help out at the club, who put in their hard yards week in, week out, have also had similar levels of abuse. And, you know, for some of them, they've stood aside in a much more quieter way than I have. I suppose the difference was that it actually became much more personal and actually in my face, both physically and mentally on Saturday, and it was horrendous. So we sit in block 102 in the southwest stand, and in the second half, a couple of fans, a couple of rows back from us, really started shouting and screaming and blaming the board for all sorts of stuff that's going on. And for me, it's like important to say that I'm on the Don's Trust board, but I'm not on the PLC. So there's kind of footballing decisions that are just not, I'm nowhere near that. And like, if I was trying to make footballing decisions, those who listen to this podcast would know that we would be playing two big blokes up front and lumping it, and the grass would never be seen because I don't understand what this green thing is on the pitch. That's how I do it, right? That's my view. And we would probably be relegated a long, long, long time ago. I am shit at football coaching. Matt, who's also seen me be a captain of a Sunday league side, and managed a Sunday League side briefly, is fully aware that there was one game where I played six left backs. So frankly, don't trust me on all these sort of things, right? So I'm not, football management, not my thing. Anyway, this particular person who is, for those of you well known on social media platforms, I didn't realise that that's who it was until the pictures and the CCTV footage of it was shown to me. I don't know, the CCTV footage hasn't been shown to me, but I know it exists. But the photos of it, I have seen. So I'm hopeful that the people responsible will get dealt with swiftly and promptly, so they've got no right to be like doing that sort of harassment and stuff like that, particularly in front of an 11-year-old girl and loads of other people around. It was really horrendous. And one of the other things this particular person was saying was quite going, we said things. The one of the things I remember most, it's not abusive, but it's just ridiculous, was that we're struggling. We should sell this ground. Think about where it is. It's prime real estate. Let's flog it all for flats and houses, pocket all the money, move back to King's Meadow and buy some decent players. That was one of his arguments and one of the reasons why I was being a numpty for advocating fan ownership and owning our own ground. The language was a lot more fruity than that, actually, as you can well imagine, and a lot more abusive. And I know that he turned around along with his friends next to him and had to go at other people behind him, including a couple of disabled people up on the gantry directly behind us as well. So it was just thoroughly unpleasant. You know, not happy. So having suffered that and been really shaken by that, I then walk out of the ground and another particular individual with a couple of friends, as I'm on the West Stand concourse, make a beeline for me and are basically haranguing me and threatening me in a much more, you know, physically friends, all sorts of horrible language coming out again, directed at me, like, get the F out of this club. You know, you should be beaten and kicked out, all this sort of stuff. And I don't have anything to do with it. You're exactly why this club is an effing mess, all this sort of stuff right in my face. Having just suffered all of that in the whole of the second half, you know, does my head in. And I said in my statement that, you know, it's kind of up for others to judge what I've been putting in. And there's loads of stuff people don't see. Like I spent a lot of time with a lot of the staff at the club, like talking to them during, you know, taking loads of hours out doing that. I work long hours working with various different things, looking at different ideas. So some of those people, they'll probably be really surprised that the Oktoberfest, the reason the Oktoberfest comes about is because I've been working with the marketing team. It was our idea. We went and found the Oompa band, all the kind of stuff like that. That's me doing that, along with some really great, hardworking people at the club. You know, Black History Month. I know people came, I'm all this woke person. Yeah, I was involved in Black History Month. I helped commission the film that we've just seen. It's brilliant. You know, and then all the stuff historically. I mean, like Mark starts this as like being, you know, some of the people that brought yellow and blue. Those of you who don't know, that was the first official program. It's a protest program during the cellar season. We've done loads of stuff. And to feel uncomfortable in your own stadium and to feel abused and on the back of all the social media abuse and flack that I've taken, frankly, for my own mental health, my own well-being, I have to look after myself. You know, I really hope that there are some really strong people out there that will stand and take on and push through the some of the stuff that people like me have been putting for. And I've had so many brilliant well wishes this last 24 hours that have come out and said, we need to do it. And it's like, you know, these are the people that don't say things normally. It's only the angry people that say it. It's the angry people who have got me, that have bullied and harassed me out of the club, that have made me feel I had no choice. And I just really hope there are all those people that see that and think that sort of is intolerable and should never happen, stand up and vote in large numbers in the next DTV elections and make sure we have a club that we can be proud of. And that we have strong candidates that will just say, right, we have to really push our club forward and make sure that we do all of that. I mean, I'm sure my brother will bring up the John Green tweet if somebody else doesn't. And that's really worthwhile mentioning because people, you know, that's really significant. I'll stop there. But I mean, I've kind of given you an overview of it all. It is really raw. It is really emotional. And it is really painful.
Which is entirely understandable. And you've very eloquently laid it out there. a lot of us obviously here on the pod, you know, we're your friends and so on, and we obviously want to help you and support you. We were all close by to what happened. I sit slightly further away, so I heard things and didn't see things. But equally, it was a very unpleasant situation overall. And you know, this is not about blowing smoke up your ass or any individual's ass, so to speak, in terms of like, well, they're all amazing and they've all been hard done by. But I think, frankly, if this happened to anyone else, you know, because other individuals that were picked on are not so prominent and not so well known, and they didn't deserve anything at all. They just had the audacity, perhaps you could say, or stupidity to just voice their opinion, and they weren't being rude and they weren't using bad language. And unfortunately, they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. I want to know, Joe and Alex and Matt, obviously you were sitting close by as well. So I don't know what else you want to add about your particular experiences or what you heard or what you saw.
It was unpleasant. I mean, let's be frank about it. We're a fan-owned club, and fans, whether they're members of the Don's Trust or not, have a right to have their say. But there are ways of doing this. Now, if you are disappointed, as I was, as I'm sure we all were, at the play on the pitch, you have the right to make that known to the players. It might be in a way that some of us would not personally do, but you've got that right. You've got the right, if you don't like the way the club is being run, to make your opinions known to the Don's Trust Board and to the PLC Board. But there are ways of doing it. And you've got to be courteous, you've got to be polite, and you've got to do it at the right time. I would suggest that doing it in the middle of a football match in an abusive manner, and that's what this was. I heard it, I saw it, I was there. I didn't see the physical threatening that happened after the match, but obviously others did. So, you know, you've got people like Niall, people who are elected to the Don's Trust Board, know that they are responsible for the running of the club, and therefore the fans, whether they're members of the DT or not, have a right to voice their opinions to them. But to do so in an abusive manner during the match is just not on. It spoils the atmosphere of the club, the friendly nature of the club, the community that we are trying very rightly and very successfully, I think, to build. You know, we have the cabin, the Don's Trust cabin, which is there for every match and has Don's Trust members there at every match. If you've got an opinion, go and voice it there. We had an SGM this week. Now, we can have a debate later on about whether the SGM is the right format or not. I don't think it is at the moment. But that's the way that Don's Trust members can go and can have their opinions heard. And you can be vociferous. You can be put forward arguments that others don't agree with, by all means. But do it in a civil manner. If you want to talk to Niall or a Don's Trust board member about what you think is wrong with the club, do so, but do so after the game and do so in a polite manner. You know, recognise, I hope, that one person, particularly if they're not on the PLC board, doesn't actually control who we sign or who makes a misplaced pass or whether Nick Zanev, who is a confidence keeper, made a howling mistake. I don't think he did, by the way, on Saturday. I thought he had a really good game and made some crucial saves. But, you know, all these things, if you've got a different opinion, that's welcome, but you've got to make it in the right way. And I think that if we have fans being abusive, then that's going to turn people off coming to our games. We have done remarkably well as a club, despite the form we've been through recently, to have decent attendances. Saturday, I don't know if it was the best ever home attendance, but it was bloody good. It was a local derby. It was a feisty match. It didn't go our way. There was a really controversial moment for their goal. There were a couple of other controversial moments. Let's have a bitch and a moan about that, by all means. But, you know, to take it out on an individual member of the Don's Trust board is simply not on. Now, we can debate, and I'll come back later and explain what I think ought to be done to make the Don's Trust Board and particularly the PLC Board a bit more responsive and a bit more open to hearing what fans have to say. But I don't want to detract from the point that if you're going to be abusive, particularly if you're going to threaten somebody, then you don't have a place at our club. And I hope that and trust that the club will take action. There is CCTV footage. There are plenty of witnesses. And these people, you know, they need action taken against them.
I'll just say that, you know, kind of not just since we've moved to Plough Lane, because it was happening at King's Meadow as well, but we're relatively unusual as a club in that people that are on boards and positions of influence are generally dotted all around the ground on a match day. You know, they sit in their preferred area of the stadium. You know, you go to a lot of other clubs and they are pretty much squirreled away in directors' boxes. I mean, I've been in a couple of directors' boxes, luckily enough, myself, Crewe, Brighton, etc., over the past couple of decades. And it's a good experience on a match day, but it also means that there isn't that connection. There isn't, you know, the board out there experiencing what the fans are actually experiencing, you know, during the match. And it would be a real shame if we lost that. And we then became the kind of club where people felt that they had to be kind of protected in a cocoon in a director's box. And that really does mean that we have to think about, you know, how we prevent these things happening, or at least create an environment where, you know, people feel safe to be on the board, feel safe to be on the board and out in front of the members and the supporters on a match day.
Yeah, I mean, that I think, Joe, you've hit on a really good point there. This is one of the things, you know. You always remember when people are having a go at their board. Their board are usually, you know, hidden away, you know. But ours aren't. As like you say, they're dotted around. So you know, it's an interesting one. You know, for me now, I'm just thinking. In actual fact, our board members probably need to be offered a space somewhere for them and a guest to be. You know, I'm not saying that they don't get season tickets, but they're upgraded so you can go into a director's lounge, you know, protect these people, because, you know, maybe sometimes people, no, I was going to say, sometimes people get really angry and, you know, a couple of hours later, they calm down. But these are dickheads, bullies, basically. It's what I mean, like, they are just bullies. But I think our board need to be protected. And whether that is having access to their own space, I don't know. Or, you know, maybe there needs to be certainly things like, you know, something on forums, because I don't think you should be allowed that social media. That's just online bullying. That needs to be looked at as well.
I hear exactly where you're coming from, and we completely understand, obviously. You know, this is a personal thing, and it feels to me, again, not blowing smoke up Niall at all, but it feels to me like Niall has, as an individual, been used as some type of paragon of all evil, both on social media, from people who carried on even after people were saying this isn't the right thing to do. They did still then have decided in the last 24, 48, 72 hours. Why I'm reading these things, I genuinely don't know, but I am, and more for me. I understand where you're coming from, Matt, in terms of, you know, board members being offered potential space or different places to sit in the ground. But ultimately, that's the whole. If you allow that type of thing to happen, then that means other people have won, so to speak, because we want to be a fans club. We want to stay the way we are. We want everyone to be allowed to sit where they want to sit and sit with their families.
Mark, that's what we want. Mark, that's what we want. But it feels like other people don't want that, and they're bullying our people out, and that's the problem. We want all of this, but if people are going to be physically attacked and abused online on a daily basis, something needs to happen, mate. And these people need to be booted out, but I bet they don't. I bet they don't get booted out, but that's what needs to happen.
Also, rather ironically, you know, there was a vote on or a discussion at the last meeting about opening up more sections of the stadium, like the lounges, etc., to people on a more general basis, to allow more of that flow of people through the stadium, you know, kind of share more of those spaces, give people a bit more access to the you know, upper echelons of the West Stand, where they currently don't have that. And the kind of things that happened on Saturday, you know, do they put that into some jeopardy because of the need for increased security? You know, hopefully everything calms down after this, but, you know, some of these things actually could then have impact on things that are going to be really beneficial to the rest of the supporters, like making sure there's a warmer, more comfortable room than the fan zone on a winter's, you know, Tuesday evening, for instance.
One thing I do want to say is that I'm going to disagree with my brother a bit in saying that I think it's really important that as a fans own club, that we are among the people on the board are amongst the fans, because I don't want to see kind of like a peer kind of element of like, you know, you're better than this person or that person, because that's not where I'm personally, I'm not at that. I'm, you know, and it's really, I'm still shaking. I'm still kind of like really struggling. And I think the one thing that, you know, and I call them like the Buckinghamshire babes, those people who are kind of, you know, advocates of selling out, the people who obviously think that the potential of having a couple back in is fine. So they're my Buckinghamshire babes, the wonderful people that had a go at me, because that's basically what they're advocating for. They're quite happy to have a potential couple again. So for me, it's one of the things we need to be wary of. I think John Green, and I'm going to mention this tweet John Green said, it was really succinct. John Green was a big advocate, came back and said, this sort of behaviour is exactly the sort of thing that's going to put me off wanting to renew my sponsorship and being connected with the club. And, you know, the fact that he wants to invest in the club because we are fan-owned. So the people who talk about getting new investors in or want to buy the club, or one, like the record of people that invest in football is appalling in terms of that. You know, there are currently in the league, Championship League One, League Two, before the pandemic, and I've mentioned these stats elsewhere, but I think it's really important to emphasise, 62% of clubs are technically insolvent before the pandemic. They're on their knees. They are financially unstable. They are spending more on players' wages than they get in revenue. We are not one of those clubs, right? We are actually financially in a better place. We have a new managing director that's coming in who, you know, yes, I do know him. So all those Buckinghamshire babes out there that have had issues with what I've said, Buckinghamshire babes, I'm sorry, but this guy does know me. So, you know, apologies. If you want to have a go at him already, fine. Buckinghamshire babes, lift your hands up and start doing your keyboard warriors and try and hassle him out, as I'm sure you probably will do in the next few days, even though he's done nothing at the moment, because he hasn't actually started. Not because he's crap, because he actually hasn't started yet. But he's pro-investment, and he sees the opportunity that we have as being unique as a fans-owned club. The likes of John Green invest because we're fans-owned. Have we exploited that to the full potential? Absolutely not. Have we looked at trying to be different? No. Really pushed that? No. Have we really exploited our commercial space as much as we could do? No, there's lots more that we can do. In a brand new stadium, there's so much we can do. And to have people like the guy that sits a couple behind me, one of the Buckinghamshire babes, well-known Buckinghamshire babe, saying that I would rather sell this ground because it's in prime real estate, 4 flats, cash, take all that cash, move back to King's Meadow, and blow it all on players' wages in the hope of getting promotion or success. How backward is that long term? That for me just feels like a real backward step.
No, it's ridiculous.
That's what Buckinghamshire babe saying that.
So this is what John Green has said. This is his tweet. It's important. Devastating. Niall has been given so much to AFC Wimbledon and is now resigning due to abuse from, quote, fans. Think of what we've accomplished in the last 20 years and ask yourselves if you're contributing to the next 20 years by abusing dedicated volunteers elected by us. Wimbledon achieved 5 promotions by sticking together and finding ways to listen to a wide variety of voices, and the club will lose much, much more than me as a sponsor if we continue to harass and harangue dedicated volunteers like Jane and Niall. It's our club. I have a vote. You have a vote. We all care. There is no future for us as fractured or cruel. The only way forward is to acknowledge that we're all doing our best and that everyone loves Wimbledon is on the same team. Divided we fall.
So as you would have noticed, that's the latter part of that quote is what I started the whole pod with tonight. Because I thought that was really a succinct description of where we're at. Look, we could spend the whole pod talking about this and perhaps justifiably we should. But what I wanted to also kind of blend and move this across to is, naturally enough, there is a consequence. You know, Niall has stood down. The saddest thing for me is that literally on last week's pod, I believe, Niall, you said words to the effect of...
Definitely crossed my mind. I'm sure there's a number of people that out there, unfortunately, that will probably be going, oh, God, we're that close to getting rid of Niall. All I've got to do is put a few more negative posts out there and he's gone. And that's probably the truth.
It's, you know, unfortunately, that is where we're at, and I entirely understand how that's come about. The question then, of course, is that what happens with that seventh vacancy? How many people are going to stand? Are people who are thinking about standing going to get put off standing? Because they see what a decent person's done and think, why on earth would I put myself in the firing line?
I very much hope that, and I'm speaking as the former chair of the ESG, the former returning officer, but I very much hope that there is a contested election, that we have a vibrant debate, a civil debate, and that the members of the Dons Trust are able to choose the candidates who best represent their viewpoint. And if somebody wants to stand for election and put forward a we should sell up type argument, so be it. We're a democratic institution. I just want to come back to something I mentioned earlier, which was, I do think that we need to think as a club, as a Dons Trust, about how we make sure that the board members are as representative as possible and are as responsive as possible. And I think it's become apparent that we're not quite at the peak of where we could be. I think we were very good in the initial days. I think time has moved on, and I think we need to do something to try to refresh. And I think that whilst Dons Trust board members are largely very responsive and very available and do respond to queries, whether it be on social media or in person or however it comes, you know, some are very, very much more tailored to the social media thing, some are very much more tailored to the in-person thing, but together they respond and they're open and accountable, and that's great. I'm not sure that the football club board is as responsive, and I think that the club needs to take that on board and find a way, a mechanism to try and do that more. But that is not to say that this abuse was in any way acceptable. And also, I don't necessarily think that it would work for some of the people who think that abuse is the first way to try to make their point known. So it's not an ideal solution. It's not going to stop some of the things that happen. But I do think that that's sort of thing that needs to be looked at. But when it comes to the election, look, you know, we need to get a vibrant slate of candidates. We need to stand up to the bullies. I'm not in any way suggesting that Niall has done anything except the right thing. He needs to think about his own situation, his own health, and his family and all the people around him. So, you know, he's achieved a huge amount, and I hope that others will take that legacy on. But we need a good Dons Trust board elected. We need to be able to allow them to continue to make the progress that we have made in many ways. But also, you know, we need to do a bit more education. The first thing that this person said on Saturday was, why aren't you, Niall in this case, sacking the manager? Now, whether or not you believe that Jackson should be sacked is actually neither here nor there for this argument. But Niall responded by saying, look, he as a Dons Trust board member who doesn't sit on the football club board doesn't have the power to sack the manager. That's something that the football club board only can do. So this guy turned around and said, so what's the point of the Dons Trust board? Well, Niall's explained a lot of what the Dons Trust have done already, all the community stuff, a load of the events, working with the club staff, the comms, the marketing, Plough Lane itself, the stadium, all that wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for the Dons Trust. But they don't control the football club and the football side of things. Niall has eloquently explained why he wouldn't be the right person to do so. But anyway, so but we have a lot of confusion still in the fan base about what the different organisations do. And we need to have better marketing of what each group does. You know, we need to look at how do we broaden the Dons Trust membership so that we get a better, a more vibrant debate, a civil debate, but a more vibrant debate, a better, more representative membership with a lot more younger people in. Do we look go down the line of suggesting that Dons Trust membership should be included in season tickets, for example? That sort of thing might get more people involved, and hopefully we'll drag them into some of the debates that we're having and make them feel that their voice is heard. At the moment, I think there's a lot of frustration that people don't feel their voice is heard. And some people, for completely inexcusable reasons, take it out with vitriol, abuse, and even violence or threats of violence. Now, that's never going to be acceptable. But I do think that we need to widen the Don's Trust fan base and membership. And that's what I would suggest that the new board look and hopefully the club as well look to do.
Just, I want to pick in that quick, Alex. I don't disagree with a lot of that. We are actually at a record membership level. So we have a record high of members at the moment. We're 4,600, which is the highest the Don's Trust has ever had. That said, I think the problem we've got equally is how much do we actually represent the area that we live in, that we operate in, you know, and the board itself, you know, do we look like what our local community is? Are we going to grow as a club if we don't start being what we actually are, the area that we're in? You know, you go into the ground, does it represent, does it look like Earlsfield? If you walk down the high street in Earlsfield, does it look like that? Do the people in the ground, do the people, or Southwest London, wider, or London, does it look like that? And that's where we need to go to be able to actually feel like we can actually properly grow, and that people from all elements can feel they can walk into AFC Wimbledon and feel welcome. And that to do that, you need to have a board that looks like that too, and that we're not there. And that's where I think we've got so much potential to grow. And it's I find it really frustrating that people go and have had a go at me massively for the going, that's woke and that is not the way the club should be. And it's, you know, that's the wrong approach and blah, blah, blah. All I'm talking about, I just want the club to become bigger and grow and more sustainable and stronger. What the hell is wrong with that? Honestly. And people say, oh, attack the woke thing.
Look, can I just say something about this absolute nonsense label woke, right? You know, for people don't know what I do, I'm a consultant in financial firms, working on IT projects and sort of business change, etc. I've been in the major financial institutions across Asia Pacific, North America, UK, Europe, right? The football club isn't doing anything that different to what you'll find a typical FTSE 100 company doing. The idea that it's doing something that is particularly political, it's doing something that's particularly to one end of the political spectrum or the other by, you know, running things like, you know, Black History Month articles in the programme, etc. This is nothing different to what major corporations are doing. And I don't see it as a particular either or in the sense that it's something that the club can't spend its time on because it should be concentrating on football. It's really not an outlier in terms of the way that, you know, major organisations are behaving and acting at the moment.
Can I just come back on something Niall said as well? We want to look like the community. That is a great ambition. It's the right thing to do, and I think we must do it. And the club has taken some steps already and hopefully will continue to do more to get there. My worry is the Don's Trust doesn't actually even yet look like the football club as a whole. You look at the SGM that happened this week, you know, there were 50-something people there, most of them older white men. That isn't even what our football club looks like, let alone the whole of the community. So
just jump in to give you a supportive stat, because I was counting the people in the room just to support you, Alex. There were 53 people at the SGM in the room. There were 4 women, 1 person of colour, 14 bald people.
Right.
Bald people, they outnumbered like every other kind of minorities. You know, I mean, it was like the predominant thing was bald. If you're bald and grey, it was like playing Guess Who. You know, if you tip down, like, roll out all the bald and grey people, you've knocked down, what, 5 people or something like that. It was ridiculous. It's the SGM needs a massive overhaul. Sorry, Alex, I'll let you come back in. I just wanted to jump in to support you with that stat.
No, I was just going to come back and say, yeah, the Don's Trust needs to do something to reinvigorate its consultation mechanism so that, you know, maybe SGMs in the current format are one tool, but there needs to be other tools as well.
Alex, that tool does not work. I mean, there were two reasons. There are now two reasons why I wouldn't stand at the Don's Trust board. I mean, and I was almost contemplating it. But what happened to Niall is unforgivable. And then that SGM, I sat with Joe. It was without doubt the most boring, tedious 3 hours of my... They've managed to make a fans club, this amazing, unique thing that we've done, the most dull thing ever. It's become like those horrible village hall sort of like meetings. Awful. Awful. I mean, there are just so many different ways of doing it. Honestly, a decent PowerPoint would make it a thousand times better. And that, and PowerPoint's boring. So, you know, it's like, it's putting everybody off. It's just so utterly ridiculous. It can't be like that. Yeah. And I know that there are bits of conversation that have to happen. I get that, Alex, but it cannot be a village hall situation because people are not going to go to it. It needs to be something completely different.
So like in my now far too many years experience of sort of meetings and project updates and things like that, is that people want easy to engage with information presented to them. And, you know, minutes of the previous meeting and long agendas just don't really hold people's attention. You know, a very common thing in a project steering meeting is to have, you know, a dashboard that kind of shows you what are our main issues at the moment, where do we think we are with those, you know, what are the upcoming risks we've got to deal with, initiatives we've got to deal with, and present it in a one-pager, very succinct sort of dashboard form, so you can immediately see where you are. You know, there are all sorts of different things you can do to present information, and, you know, things do need to be livened up a bit, I would have said.
Absolutely. I mean, I probably come at this from a slightly different angle in that I've sat through many, many, many council meetings, including planning meetings, which is the sort of thing that I think Matt was referring to as being the most tedious things on earth. But yeah, there are ways of doing it, even at an in-person meeting, which properly engages the audience and allows the audience to feel that they are having a say and they understand what the debate is and what the information is they're being given. But it shouldn't just be in-person meetings. There should be a wide range of different formats to allow people to have their say, to put forward their ideas, to get it off their chest, even if it turns out to be the most bizarre idea in the world. Occasionally, these little nuggets come up that are really good things. And if enough people say, actually, that's something that matters to us, it's something that should be taken on board. We had a discussion on Saturday about the Don's Trust election, about the hustings and so on, whether it should be going back to the one-on-one interview or whether it should be the panel debate as we had this previous year. And actually, I'm in favour of the panel debate because I think that candidates should be allowed to talk about what matters to them, not what matters to the person who's interviewing them. The same goes for an audience, for the members as well. They should be able to raise the issues that matter to them. If it's not something within the competence of the Don's Trust, they can be gently told that. But you know, there needs to be that responsiveness and that interaction. I spend my cash on looking flash and grabbing your attention. The devil take your stereo and your record collection. The way you look, you'll qualify for next year's old age pension. Stand and deliver the value of your life.
And the reality there, of course, is without excusing anything that's been said and any of the way things were said to Niall and others on Saturday, that is part of why those people feel, for want of a better expression, disenfranchised, because they feel like they have no voice. They feel like they have no way of understanding what's going on and engaging. And they are either not prepared or not aware or just not in any way engaged and wanting to get engaged. And they feel that the methodology there is at the moment to get engaged is not anything that's really going to work for them. So change needs to happen in that regard. And engagement of all different types and all different voices and all different opinions is welcome and should be welcome from the Don's Trust perspective, if you ask me.
Without turning into it's all, you know, bald and stale, etc., there have been improvements in some of the ways that the Trust has, you know, presented information, like the financial updates, etc., over the last couple of years. So, you know, the intake onto the board from about sort of 2018 onwards, I think, have made some strides to improve that. But there's clearly ways it can be improved still.
I think what's coming up is actually a really fundamental change in the governance of the Don's Trust and how we do it. And this is something I think is really important, because it is this new four groups that will be meeting quarterly: the community group, the membership group, the culture and mission, those four groups. And the idea of those four groups is that they should be able to actually attract other people to sit on those working groups and take part and actually get those experts in and be very open about what the kind of things have been discussed, and let people have that proper conversation, because that hasn't happened as well as it should do. So that's a very big progress. And the other thing is the PLC governance. So that's another thing that's up, that's changing. So the PLC governance would include having three people from the DTB, three NEDs and, you know, some of the minority shareholders. The NEDs would be looking at the where the gaps are within how we operate as a club, which doesn't exist at the moment. So actually having somebody who is an NED whose entire skill set is football management or football operations, which hasn't happened before. I'm a big advocate of having somebody on there as well that's a big community figure, like somebody who actually represents and knows what our local community is. That's what I also think is important in that PLC. So we've got people making decisions that are holistic. At the moment, that isn't the case. So there's a real need for that restructure. So there is, it's a sad case of affairs that there is change happening, and the DTB has been making a whole load of changes. They've all been behind the scenes. So the new HOFO, the new MD, all of that, that's all new. The fan zone, the kind of way we do stuff, all of that is new, and all of that is connecting a lot to what the DTB are doing. We're just not doing the stuff on the pitch. You know, it's not, you know what I mean? We're not experts on the pitch. You know, I mean, I don't mind. I'd quite like us to have Alan Court back up front, but I think he's pretty past it now.
Joe's going to explain what an NED is. Carry on, Joe.
Non-executive director. Yeah. No, what I was going to say was that, I think that Ian Pollock raised a great question. I think he put you a bit on the spot, Niall, on Thursday night at the meeting and saying, well, you know, how had it taken so long for this restructuring to get to the point that it could be presented to the members, etc. And I share that frustration with him. And, you know, you gave, I thought, a kind of answer that was very much the, okay, it's been done now, you know, kind of it's taken some time to get there. We get it, but let's move on. And I think I recognise that we've just moved to a new stadium. And from what I've seen of the demands placed on the board members, there's been a lot of doing and strategizing and governing. Get the move on point. But I think we are now in a position where the trust does need to start moving into that more of a governance role rather than people working flat out, to keep the lights on, shall we say.
Joe, that's one of the reasons why I've gone. You know, it's like, I've taken so much flack for all the work that I put in, and that other people on the DTB. I mean, what I wrote before Saturday was how sad it was that some really good people have gone, but I get why they went, you know, and I actually know that some of them had really suffered abuse. Now, where I'm at in now is that I want like some really strong people to stand and to really push for it, and my God, will you get my backing, you know, and stuff, and you'll get my support, and you'll get like what I'm doing. But I just personally putting my head above the parapet right now is I've had it. I've been a totem pole of hate, and that's the word I'm gonna have to use it, hate, for quite a while. And you know, at some point you buckle, and I buckled.
It's not buckling, Niall. It's not buckling. It genuinely isn't. You can't have that level of abuse and being physically threatened. It's just, you know, we're in a voluntary situation. As you say, DTB members sit amongst the fans because we are fans. It's just appalling behaviour. And I don't believe the people who are doing this sort of bullying, they're not fans, in my opinion.
I mean, this is just a bit that gets me, Matt, right? Is that I can't get over the fact that I still feel weak and I've let people down. Because I tried to do a lot of things. I made a lot of promises. I made some progress, and I tried to encourage a lot of people and put my arms around a lot of people who are putting so much work in. And there are so many brilliant people. I think we definitely need to do more to protect our volunteers. I've heard that from other people that have said they've really struggled. And I think I'd best massively advocate for a volunteer manager at the club, like proper paid role, to really use all of that and to kind of really do that. But, you know, there's been bits over the last 24, 48 hours where I've just felt like I've let some people down because they voted for me and they put some trust in me. And I can only really hope that some of those people who share similar views or who wanted my manifesto, like what I was stood for, really put their name forward and go for it and like make sure these bullies, these Buckinghamshire babes, don't win. Because they've got me, they've got, you know, you've got you. Congratulations, Buckinghamshire Babes, you've got my head on a stick. Well done. I really hope that other people stand up and don't let the bullies win.
I'm going to move this on. It's a very emotive topic. We entirely understand why. but we'd be remiss because football and being Wimbledon fans is what binds us and unifies us, as we've been saying. We'd be remiss if we didn't talk about what's going on the pitch. We know we've only been at Plough Lane for a short period of time, and obviously we know what the toxic things were that we've been talking about so far tonight. However, that was during the game. Then after the game, from both the movers stand, the north stand, and also from the main stand itself, there was vitriol, and I don't know that it was anything less than vitriol, really, that was coming from the fans, and it wasn't all aimed at the referee for his utterly incompetent decision. A lot of that was aimed at the players, and a lot of that was aimed, from what I can see, at the management as well. And unfortunately, based on recent performances, it's hard to say that's not justified.
I think, Mark, it's right. I mean, it's a really weird one. That incident with their goal, which was just ludicrous, it's difficult to know how you react to that as a player, because I think a lot of times you would use that and you would get angry and you'd go for it. But you've obviously got to keep your head, because, you know, getting sent off isn't going to do anyone any favours. And then I just think that they didn't know how to react to it. And it just everything went wrong. I mean, I'm not saying it all came from that incident, but I feel that was a contributing factor. I think it played on people's minds. They didn't know how to react, and they didn't. And whatever was said in the dressing room, I mean, I'm guessing Johnny Jackson, who I now discovered is a musician, he might have sung a few chords or whatever it is.
The alarm goes off and we're in the full wind. Still don't know if we're anywhere near the peak. I watch the news and the daily briefing. I get the same old sinking feeling. I said that's isolation. That's isolation.
But my trouble is, I think it would have been a ballad, not a sort of like a rock song or something like that. Do you know what I mean? It would have been sort of like a soft rock sort of thing. Whereas really we need something a bit more, you know, tub thumping.
You say you can't fire them up.
Yeah, I agree with that.
There's no pump up the volume, man.
I think we're, that's the thing. I mean, like, you know, me and Matt talked about this a bit afterwards as well, is that, you know, Johnny Jackson is a South Londoner, right? Fine. But he's a Charlton man. And there's a difference between the Charlton ethos and the Wimbledon ethos. Charlton have always been this nice, lovely community club that's like very uber friendly, but like almost establishment in their niceness. Right. Wimbledon has been a club that's kind of been, and I love the quote that you get. I'm like, look, I am redoing the books and stuff like that. Matt mentioned it, right? Available in before Christmas, hopefully, by the way. And you get the quote going, we're the raggedy ass Rovers. Do you look at the team now and look at us? Are we raggedy ass Rovers? Are we the kind of people who are going, our entire raison d'etre is to stick one up that and to rally round and to have that mental strength? I'm looking at our team at the moment, and I think we've got the biggest hangover from last season that is possible, because there is talent in our team. And you get Johnny Jackson will talk about it and go like, they played really well in training, they look really good, and they turn up on a Saturday and they're just shit, right? I think the reality is that we need raggedy ass Rovers again.
No, if only you used the word shit, that would be brilliant. Mark,
we love giving Alex things to edit out. Something that was posed to me in the aftermath of Saturday's game, which is it's a rhetorical question almost. It was, how many of the current first choice 11 would get in to the playoff winning squad that beat Plymouth 2-0 at Wembley? And it's a simple answer. The answer is zero, unfortunately. And I guess that's the template. That's the benchmark that we all have of that wonderful day, but also the attitude that that team pulled together, because they had poor times. They had that awful situation when Ben Wilson threw the ball in his own net and we lost to Forest Green in the FA Cup. And then they all went off to Christmas jolly and ignored everybody. But they pulled themselves together. They had some strong characters in that dressing room and it came together. And ever since then, whenever you have a right back who doesn't play very well, it's like, why can't it be like Barry Fuller? Or you have a left back who doesn't do great and it's like, we want Callum Kennedy back even if he's 37, and so on and so forth.
You're right. I looked at, there are a number of reasons, number of excuses, if you like. I looked at the injury list in the programme before Saturday's game, and it's horrendous, and we're missing some of our really good players. And obviously people also look and say, well, we sold Rudoni and so on, and we have to. We're a selling club, and we are great in developing and nurturing new talent, and we can identify the Jack Curry, Ayuba Sal, maybe even Alfie Trialist and so on, who are players who in the future we may be able to get some decent money for, but we are going to have to sell them because that's the nature of the sort of club we are. What got me on Saturday was not that people lost their heads a bit at the ridiculous refereeing decision, but that came after, what, 36 minutes or so? If they'd lost their heads until half-time, I could understand it. But the manager's job at half-time is to get them back in the game. And the second half performance was abysmal. You look at the stats, and we won possession, but, you know, we had no shots on goal, no shots on target, no nothing. And we just didn't look like we had anything to us. And yeah, the players have to take responsibility for that, but the manager has to take responsibility too. And I don't know whether Matt's right or not. None of us can know because we weren't in the dressing room. But yeah, that's the sort of thing that the manager at halftime needs to get the players together and say, look, it was a ridiculous decision, but, you know, use that anger in the right way. Get out there and perform. You look at our playing earlier in the season, even the first game at home to Gillingham, and we won it. We won it well. We played, yeah, we had a bad 15 minutes in it, but we looked overall pretty competent. And I thought, well, actually, you know, we may not be rushing up back to promotion straight away, but we look like a sort of team who can do it with these players. These players can do it. It's clearly an attitude thing. It's clearly also a confidence thing, not mentioning Nick Zaniff, but yeah. So somehow the manager needs to get a grip. And whether he has that in his ability, I don't know. Hopefully the new head of football comes in sooner rather than later, and he or she will be somebody who can inspire the team and change the ethos and change us away from a downward-looking, depressed, losing club and make us the sort of team spirit Wimbledon that we had back in the Crazy Gang years. That's what we need at the moment. We're up against it. We're not getting decisions because referees are terrible in our league. But we've got the fan base. When they sing like crazy. We've got the ability and a decent budget this year. So why aren't we performing? And that's something that I would look to the head of football to deal with. I'm not one of these who believes that Jackson should be sacked just because we are losing games. But I think we need to look at whether he is the right person to motivate the team and whether he, with the new HOFO, can actually turn this club around.
And the reality, of course,
everyone
is...
Everyone here, who would sack JJ?
Back or back?
Who would sack?
Joe sang sack.
I would.
Matt sang sack.
I would.
I would back him until the new head of football comes in and has had a chance to look at the whole setup and can report back to the board as to whether he thinks that Jackson has the ability to turn it round.
I know why Matt is saying sack, because he wants Simon Bassey. and that's the reality. Because the crap element of it all is there's a cost.
Yeah,
and
I know.
There wasn't a massive amount of candidates wanting to be manager of AFC Wimbledon. So the idea of thinking we're going to get like some brilliant caliber coach come in who just loves it is a bit of a myth. And it will cost, and it will come out of the playing budget. So, you know, you sack JJ, you're actually losing will be 80 grand out of the playing budget. And we haven't got, you know, we're not like rich club. There's an element about it. It's just really crap to say that. You know, I'm not particularly impressed, but there aren't that many great people out there to take on that role. And that's the harsh reality. God, I'm not on the PLC boards. It's not my decision. So, you know, whatever. But I find it really difficult. I there is a sentimental part of me that knows Bassey loves us. And I know that he has got has always had a very good special relationship with players. You know, you talk to any ex-player and they'll go like, Simon Bassey's the one who can motivate me and bring me up. So if you're looking for a man motivator, Bassey could be the right person. But I think Bassey would need a bloody good coach to tell him how to actually do it at that level. I think at a lower level, Bassey would have been fine. But I just think you need to have a coach if you can get Bassey in. Mark?
I take Alex's point about the head of football entirely, and that would help Bassey, you'd think. The reality is if we haven't got one and we're still potentially recruiting for one, are we even going to get one till Christmas? And people just, I mean, everyone reacts in a knee-jerk fashion. The government are doing it every day. But in a knee-jerk fashion in football, Doncaster Rovers, who are mid-table and have got a much better record over the last 10 games than we have, I've just sacked their manager because apparently having been relegated along with us, you know, the mid-table performance they've achieved so far, which is better than ours, is not good enough from their perspective. And yet they're not in any way a particularly major name or, as far as I can see, someone who would have been tipped to be anything close to being a player or even promotion candidates this year. So that's the problem. You've already had six or seven teams lower than us and around us who've sacked their managers already, and people are looking at that and thinking, well, it's all wrong. And unfortunately, with the maelstrom that happened on Saturday on and off the pitch, everyone's thinking, you know, Jackson does not ever come across as the right kind of person, and he comes across very personable. He came across very personable on the EFL highlights, but we don't necessarily want personable people, you know. We want people who will be up and at them, and all five of us here on the pod are old enough to remember, you know, the likes of Toby Brown, the likes of Harry Bassett in their own different ways. And we're not saying get those particular individuals back, because obviously they're rather older in the tooth now. But who is the equivalent?
I did like Dave Anderson. He was quite loud. But I don't think he'd cope at this level, man, but I did like it. But, you know. Sorry, Dave, you're listening, by the way.
Just say something. I mean, obviously, everyone's got their sort of expectations, and, you know, are they being met? Are they not? I think it's probably worth, just for people that didn't go to the meeting on Thursday night or haven't seen any kind of updates, like the financial update the sort of club gave a few weeks ago was that at the start of the season, they were looking at a budget which they thought would place us in sort of 7th to 12th place and overachieve. You know, it was clarified at the meeting that realistically, with the latest set of figures we've seen, it is a mid-table budget, right? But he's below that quite considerably now, both in terms of the places and the points total we've achieved so far. So the question then becomes, well, how long do you keep saying, well, we've got another appointment to wait for, we're given another couple more games. You know, it really has to turn around very quickly for him to be secure in his job.
And that's the thing. That is the thing, because, you know, we've waited previously too long to turn things around, and there's just a bad attitude. There just doesn't look like there's any fire in the belly.
So I think this is where you need the PLC board to be accountable and actually faster moving than they are, and a proper, very clear the fact that they are the people making those football decisions. It's not happening. So I'll be honest, I should not come anywhere near having to have a decision about who's the manager of the club and who's not, right? I shouldn't, as a DTB board member, which I am still till the end of the year, that shouldn't be my decision, right? It shouldn't be. It should be somebody else who actually knows their onions and knows what it's talking about. I totally get everybody else's opinions. Like, I could be said, it'd be quite good to have somebody else comes in who's a bit more upbeat and stuff. Sorry, Mark.
Yeah, we like energy and we like effort and enthusiasm, and that's what anyone coming under the Doncaster board is going to need to have overall. I'm going to wrap it up, guys. We've spoken quite a lot with a lot of passion, a lot of energy and enthusiasm, and I really appreciate everyone's contributions, definitely Joe's contributions as a guest tonight. We're going to wrap it up in our usual random way with some numbers. These numbers should be quite familiar to Niall. If they're not, then frankly, his memory is failing him. So... they might well be something you may have put on social media at some point this week, Niall. So for Matt's number is 200 million. What is the question to which 200 million is the answer?
When I start doing the Euro Millions. I usually wait for about 200 million to come up. I feel anything less than that, it's not worth my while. Do you know what I mean?
Just to clarify for this week, these are not related to AFC Wimbledon, but they are related to football in general in Britain.
Is it the amount of parachute payment for clubs relegated from the Prem?
No, it's not. But that may be an answer to a different question that's going to come up in a minute or two.
It's not. I don't know. Ronaldo's daily wage.
I'm not allowed to answer these, am I, Mark?
Close. Well, if you know the answer, jump in.
Could get several 200 million answers.
Yeah, there's lots of 200 million answers, Mark. This is how you work.
That's how I work. And then you work back. This is how it goes. Just to annoy Matt. Okay. The answer is apparently 200 million is the average annual TV revenue for Premier League clubs, which sounds ridiculous. But there we go.
Hold on. And like, so for every, have you got this next question? So for every £10 a Premier League club gets from TV revenue, and that's that big pot of money that's supposed to be shared about the pyramid and make the pyramid secure, £10 for Premier League club, how much do AFC Wimbledon get, Mark?
Oh, I didn't read that bit.
Right, so
I think it's £4, but I could be wrong.
How much does a League Two club get out of that on the equivalent on that big split?
About 2p.
Not bad, Alex. 4p.
4p. There you go. I know the new four was in the summer. Okay. For Alex, then, the number is 107. What is the question?
Not a clue. The average age of the players that Niall actually wants to bring back to AFC Wimbledon.
Where's Doc Dowden when you need him?
Doc Dowden, he was brilliant. I was reading about Doc Dowden. He scored one of his goals. He scored in a 3-0 win back in the 1940s. Was a free kick that only went in after knocking out one of the players on the wall. So it was a rebound. The player was not.
We say that we'd heard enough of Niall already without him digressing even further. Anyone else as to what 107 could be the answer for?
107th FA Cup final.
In fact, it is the average.
Can I say?
Go on, Niall.
88 was 107th FA Cup final.
Right. It's the average amount a Championship club spends on players' wages as opposed to their revenue. They spend 107% of their revenue on players' wages in the Championship.
Correct.
Unsustainable.
Niall, that's what I'm aiming for. Okay, for Joe, and a clue to Joe that this answer's already been given. The question's already been stated, actually. The number is 55 million. What's the question?
Well, you're presupposing I was listening to all that. I was very good way in slightly. 55 million.
Yes.
Don't know.
Okay. Alex?
Don't know.
It is the parachute payment. That's right.
I knew that. It just came to me.
That is, let's be clear, it's the amount of money given to one football club.
And it's nice work if you can work that strategy where you just get promoted and relegated between the Championship and the Premier League every few years.
Mark, go on then. On the back of that, what's the number 140 relate to?
Ooh.
That's got to be the percentage of wages to turnover for Premiership clubs.
No, 140 is the amount of money, the amount of clubs, that's all of League One, all of League Two, all of National League North and South, the top two tiers in the Women's League, 140 clubs. That's the same amount of money that the Premier League gives to them for the one club they're relegated to the Premier League.
Yep.
So one club, 55 million, 140 others, actually slightly less than that, 45 million. There you go. That's the Premier League and its lovely love of the pyramid structure.
Not that I'm bitter about this. Wrapping up for Niall, to give him the stat he's already mentioned this, earlier on, 62.
62?
Yeah.
Is that the... I mentioned this.
Yes,
62.
You did.
62 is the
year before
Wimbledon won the FA Amateur Cup. Is that right?
That was 63.
The year before,
Mark. You mentioned this earlier on yourself.
I know. 62 is the number of clubs that were technically insolvent in Championship League One and League Two in 2020.
is the correct answer. Sadly, sadly, sadly.
Not us. Not us, Mark.
Not us. Not us.
Very important, by the way.
It's all right. It's been a more serious pod tonight and a much longer one as well, but correct and appropriate to do so. Joe, we really appreciate your contributions tonight. Alex, great to have you back. We've been the Same Old Wombles. That's episode 9. Find us on Spotify and Apple and everywhere else you find your podcasts. We're out every Tuesday morning. Listen in and contribute and find us on Twitter and contribute constructively to future debate. Come on, you Dons. We'll see you next week.